it in would be laden with the garlic smell. Then with the wisp he rubbed all over the jamb of the door, above, below, and at each side, and round the fireplace in the same way. It all seemed grotesque to me, and presently I said, "Well, Professor, I know you always have a reason for what you do, but this certainly puzzles me. It is well we have no sceptic here, or he would say that you were working some spell to keep out an evil spirit." "Perhaps I am," he answered quietly, as he began to make the wreath which Lucy was to wear round her neck. We then waited whilst Lucy made her toilet for the night, and when she was in bed, he came and himself fixed the wreath of garlic round her neck. The last words he said to her were, "Take care you do not disturb it, and even if the room feel close, do not tonight open the window or the door." "I promise," said Lucy, "and thank you both a thousand times for all your kindness to me. Oh, what have I done to be blessed with such friends?" As we left the house in my fly, which was waiting, Van Helsing said, "Tonight I can sleep in peace, and sleep I want. Two nights of travel, much reading in the day between, and much anxiety on the day to follow, and a night to sit up without to wink. Tomorrow in the morning early you call for me, and we come together to see our pretty miss. So much more strong for my spell, which I have work. Ho, ho!" He seemed so confident that I, remembering my own confidence two nights before, and with the baneful result, felt awe and vague terror. It must have been my weakness that made me hesitate to tell it to my friend, but I felt it all the more, like unshed tears.
Chapter 11 Lucy Westenra's Diary. 11th of September. How good they all are to me. I quite love that dear Dr. Van Helsing. I wonder why he was so anxious about these flowers. He positively frightened me, he was so fierce. And yet he must have been right, for I feel comfort from them already. Somehow, I do not dread being alone tonight, and I can go to sleep without fear. I shall not mind any flapping outside the window. Oh, the terrible struggle that I've had against sleep so often of late, the pain of sleeplessness, or the pain of the fear of sleep, with such unknown horrors as it has for me. How blessed are some people whose lives have no fears, no dreads, to whom sleep is a blessing that comes nightly and brings nothing but sweet dreams. Well, here I am tonight, hoping for sleep, and lying like Ophelia in the play, with virgin crants and maiden struments. I never liked garlic before, but tonight it is delightful. There is peace in its smell. I feel sleep coming already. Good night, everybody.
Dr. Seward's Diary. 12th of September. Called at the Barclay and found Van Helsing, as usual, up to time. The carriage ordered from the hotel was waiting. The professor took his bag, which he always brings with him now. Let all be put down exactly. Van Helsing and I arrived at Hillingham at 8 o'clock. It was a lovely morning. The bright sunshine and all the fresh feeling of early autumn seemed like the completion of nature's annual work. The leaves were turning to all kinds of beautiful colours, but had not yet begun to drop from the trees. When we entered, we met Mrs. Westenra coming out of the morning room. She's always an early riser. She greeted us warmly and said, "You'll be glad to know that Lucy is better. The dear child is still asleep. I looked into her room and saw her, but did not go in lest I should disturb her." The professor smiled and looked quite jubilant. He rubbed his hands together and said, "Aha! I thought I had diagnosed the case. My treatment is working." To which she answered, "You must not take all the credit to yourself, doctor. Lucy's state this morning is due in part to me." "How do you mean, ma'am?" asked the professor. "Well, I was anxious about the dear child in the night, and went into her room. She was sleeping soundly, so soundly that even my coming did not wake her. But the room was awfully stuffy. There were a lot of those horrible, strong-smelling flowers about everywhere, and she had actually a bunch of them round her neck. I feared that the heavy odour would be too much for the dear child in her weak state, so I took them all away and opened a bit of the window to let in a little fresh air. You will be pleased with her, I am sure." She moved off into her boudoir, where she usually breakfasted early. As she had spoken, I watched the professor's face and saw it turn ashen grey. He had been able to retain his self-command whilst the poor lady was present, for he knew her state and how mischievous a shock would be. He actually smiled on her as he held open the door for her to pass into her room. But the instant she had disappeared, he pulled me, suddenly and forcibly, into the dining room and closed the door. Then, for the first time in my life, I saw Van Helsing break down. He raised his hands over his head in a sort of mute despair, and then beat his palms together in a helpless way. Finally, he sat down on a chair, and putting his hands before his face, began to sob, with loud, dry sobs that seemed to come from the very racking of his heart. Then he raised his arms again, as though appealing to the whole universe. "God! God! God!" he said. "What have we done? What has this poor thing done that we are so sore beset? Is there fate amongst us still, sent down from the pagan world of old, that such things must be and in such way? This poor mother, all unknowing, and all for the best as she think, does such thing as lose her daughter body and soul? And we must not tell her, we must not even warn her, or she die, and then both die. Oh, how we are beset! How are all the powers of the devils against us?" Suddenly he jumped to his feet. "Come," he said, "come, we must see and act. Devils or no devils, or all the devils at once, it matters not. We fight him all the same." He went to the hall door for his bag, and together we went up to Lucy's room. Once again I drew up the blind, whilst Van Helsing went towards the bed. This time he did not start as he looked on the poor face with the same awful, waxen pallor as before. He wore a look of stern sadness and infinite pity. "As I expected," he murmured, with that hissing inspiration of his which meant so much. Without a word he went and locked the door, and then began to set out on the little table the instruments for yet another operation of transfusion of blood. I had long ago recognized the necessity and began to take off my coat, but he stopped me with a warning hand. "No," he said. "Today you must operate. I shall provide. You are weakened already." As he spoke, he took off his coat and rolled up his shirt sleeve. Again the operation. Again the narcotic. Again some return of color to the ashy cheeks, and the regular breathing of healthy sleep. This time I watched whilst Van Helsing recruited himself and rested. Presently he took an opportunity of telling Mrs. Westenra that she must not remove anything from Lucy's room without consulting him, that the flowers were of medicinal value, and that the breathing of their odour was a part of the system of cure. Then he took over the care of the case himself, saying that he would watch this night and the next, and would send me word when to come. After an hour, Lucy waked from her sleep, fresh and bright, and seemingly not much the worse for her terrible ordeal. What does it all mean? I am beginning to wonder if my long habit of life amongst the insane is beginning to tell upon my own brain.
Lucy Westenra's Diary. 17th of September. 4 days and nights of peace. I am getting so strong again that I hardly know myself. It is as if I had passed through some long nightmare and had just awakened to see the beautiful sunshine and feel the fresh air of the morning around me. I have a dim half-remembrance of long, anxious times of waiting and fearing, darkness in which there was not even the pain of hope to make present distress more poignant, and then long spells of oblivion, and the rising back to life as a diver coming up through a great press of water. Since, however, Dr. Van Helsing has been with me, all this bad dreaming seems to have passed away. The noises that used to frighten me out of my wits, the flapping against the windows, the distant voices which seemed so close to me, the harsh sounds that came from I know not where and commanded me to do I know not what, have all ceased. I go to bed now without any fear of sleep. I do not even try to keep awake. I have grown quite fond of the garlic, and a boxful arrives for me every day from Harlem. Tonight, Dr. Van Helsing is going away, as he has to be for a day in Amsterdam. But I need not be watched. I am well enough to be left alone. Thank God for Mother's sake, and dear Arthur's, and for all our friends who have been so kind. I shall not even feel the change, for last night Dr. Van Helsing slept in his chair a lot of the time. I found him asleep twice when I awoke. But I did not fear to go to sleep again, although the boughs or bats or something flapped almost angrily against the window panes.
The Pall Mall Gazette, 18th of September. The Escaped Wolf Perilous Adventure of Our Interviewer. Interview with the Keeper in the Zoological Gardens. After many inquiries and almost as many refusals, and perpetually using the words Pall Mall Gazette as a sort of talisman, I managed to find the keeper of the section of the Zoological Gardens in which the Wolf Department is included. Thomas Bilder lives in one of the cottages in the enclosure behind the Elephant House, and was just sitting down to his tea when I found him. Thomas and his wife are hospitable folk, elderly and without children, and if the specimen I enjoyed of their hospitality be of the average kind, their lives must be pretty comfortable. The keeper would not enter on what he called business until the supper was over, and we were all satisfied. Then when the table was cleared and he had lit his pipe, he said, "Now, sir, you can go on and ask me what you want. You'll excuse me refusing to talk of professional subjects afore meals. I'll give the wolves and the jackals and the hyenas in all our section their tea afore I begins to ask them questions."
"How do you mean, ask them questions?" I queried, wishful to get him into a talkative humour.
"Hitting them over the head with a pole is one way. Scratching of their ears in another. When gents as is flush wants a bit of a show-off to their girls. I don't so much mind the first, the hitting of the pole part afore I chucks in their dinner, but I waits till they've had their sherry and coffee, so to speak, afore I tries on with the ear scratching. Mind you," he added philosophically, "there's a deal of the same nature in us as in them there animals. Is you a-coming and asking of me questions about my business, and I that grump-like that only for your bloomin' half-quid I'd have seen you blowed first for I'd answer? Not even when you ask me sarcastic-like if I'd like you to ask the superintendent if you might ask me questions. Without offence, did I tell you to go to hell?"
"You did.
And when you said you'd report me for using obscene language, that was hitting me over the head. But the half-quid made that all right. I weren't a-going to fight, so I waited for the food, and did with my owl as the wolves and lions and tigers does. But Lord love your heart, now that the old woman has stuck a chunk of her tea-cake in me, and rinsed me out with her bloomin' old teapot, and I've lit up, you may scratch my ears for all you're worth, and you won't even get a growl out of me. Drive along with your questions. I know what you're a-coming at, that ere escaped wolf."
"Exactly. I want you to give me your view of it. Just tell me how it happened, and when I know the facts, I'll get you to say what you consider was the cause of it, and how you think the whole affair will end."
"All right, Governor. This here is about the old story. That ere wolf, what we call Bersica, was one of three grey ones that come from Norway to Jamrak's, which we bought off him 4 years ago. He was a nice, well-behaved wolf that never gave no trouble to talk of. I'm more surprised at him for wanting to get out nor any other animal in the place. But there, you can't trust wolves no more nor women."
"Don't you mind him, sir,"
broke in Mrs. Tom with a cheery laugh.
"He's got mind in the animals so long that blessed if he ain't like old wolf hisself. But there ain't no harm in him."
"Well, sir, it was about 2 hours after feeding yesterday when I first hear my disturbance. I was making up a litter in the monkey house for a young puma which is ill. But when I heard the yelping and howling, I come away straight. There was Bersica a-tearing like a mad thing at the bars as if he wanted to get out. There wasn't much people about that day, and close at hand was only one man. A tall, thin chap, with hook nose and a pointed beard, with a few white hairs running through it. He had hard, cold-looking red eyes, and I took a sort of mislike to him, for it seemed as if it was him as they was irritated at. He had white kid gloves on his hands, and he pointed out the animals to me and says, "Keeper, these wolves seem upset at something." "Maybe it's you," says I, for I did not like the airs as he'd give hisself. He didn't get angry as I hoped he would, but he smiled, a kind of insolent smile, with a mouth full of white, sharp teeth. "Oh, no, they wouldn't like me," he says. "Oh, yes, they would," says I, imitating of him. "They always like a bone or two to clean their teeth on about tea time, which you has a bag full." Well, it was a odd thing, but when the animals see us a-talking, they lay down. And when I went over to Bursica, he let me stroke his ears same as ever. That there man come over and blessed but if he didn't put in his hand and stroke the old wolf's ears too. "Take care," says I, "Bursica is quick." "Never mind," he says, "I'm used to him." "Are you in the business yourself?" I says, taking off me hat, for a man what trades in wolves, and cetera, is a good friend of keepers. "No," says he, "not exactly in the business, but I have made pets of several." And with that, he lifts his hat as polite as a lord and walks away. Old Bursica kept a-looking after him till he was out of sight, and then went and lay down in a corner and wouldn't come out the whole evening. Well, last night, so soon as the moon was up, the wolves here all began howling. There weren't nothing for them to howl at. There weren't no one near, except someone that was evidently a-calling a dog somewheres out back of the gardings in the park road. Once or twice, I went out to see that all was right, and it was, and then the howling stopped. Just before 12 o'clock, I just took a look round afore turning in, and bust me, but when I came opposite to old Bursica's cage, I see the rails broken and twisted about, and the cage empty. And that's all I know for certain.
Did anyone else see anything?
One of our gardeners was a-coming home about that time from a harmony, when he sees a big grey dog coming out through the guarding edges. At least, so he says. But I don't give much for it myself. For if he did, he never said a word about it to his missus when he got home. And it was only after the escape of the wolf was made known, and we had been up all night hunting of the park for Bursica, that he remembered seeing anything. My own belief was that the harmony had got into his head.
Now, Mr. Bildock, can you account in any way for the escape of the wolf?
Well, sir, he said,
with a suspicious sort of modesty,
I think I can, but I don't know as how you'd be satisfied with the theory.
Certainly I shall, if a man like you who knows the animals from experience can't hazard a good guess at any rate who is even to try.
Well then, sir, I account for it this way. It seems to me that ere wolf escaped simply because he wanted to get out.
From the hearty way that both Thomas and his wife laughed at the joke, I could see that it had done service before.